One of the things that I most look forward to on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur is the opportunity to greet one another in the foyer as people enter coming for services, and to say to people, as I often do, as I learned from Rabbi Perlson, Alav Shalom, welcome home. It's been a little bit of a different year this year, as at least as many people have said to me, welcome home. Having had the privilege during this past year of having 6 months of sabbatical time when I was away from temple time that I'm still really fully understanding myself. But the largest part of that time was spent in Medinat Yisrael. I thought I was going to spend the time in Israel, but it turned out I spent the time in Medinat Yisrael instead. Now, yes, I know those are the same thing, but it's interesting how the Israel that I experienced was actually quite different in many ways than the Israel that I had encountered before, partially because of time having passed and partially because of the things that I was privileged to spend time doing. Serving as effectively a volunteer shaliach working for the reform movement in Israel, I had an opportunity to spend a lot of time with Israelis that are not waiting there when you get off the touring bus. To spend times in parts of Israel that we don't often encounter and that aren't reported on the news. And I found that while I felt at home, it wasn't as easy as I expected to greet one another, to meet one another in a way that involved actual understanding. The more I had experience there, the more I was concerned and remain concerned today that while there is much about which to be hopeful, that there is a growing divide between Jews around the world and the Jewish population that live in the land of Israel. This is not defined by the usual political things that you see in the news, which are significant, but I believe from my experience that you were privileged to give me, that you were made my privilege this year to have, it's really something different. Those are the symptoms of a deeper cause. Let me share a story with you that helped me begin to realize it. I had the opportunity while I was in Israel to visit with our first young emissary, Tal Greenbaum, our first Shin Shinit, from our first pair of Israeli emissaries in 2008-2009. Tal, who was a teenager then, the year before her army service, is now a teacher in a grade 7 classroom in Shchunat Dalet in one of the more difficult neighborhoods of Be'er Sheva. And being that I spent time in Be'er Sheva, connecting to our wonderful Reform congregation that we've helped found there, Ramot Shalom, I reconnected with Tal, and she invited me to come meet with her class. So we discussed in advance how it was that I could help them understand how me and my life are somewhat different than the things they may assume. Now, keep in mind, not surprisingly, that of these 27 grade 7 students, none of them had ever met a Reform rabbi before. That may not be surprising. Then again, none of them had ever met a Reform Jew before. So we thought I should explain to them, and one of the things I told them, all of this, of course, taking place in Hebrew, was that I, in fact, where I live, like most of us here, we'll hear it again in front of the Torah tomorrow, I have two names. One of my names is Michael Dolgan, and another one of my names is Meir ben Baruch v'Yehudit. Right? That I have a secular or everyday name and a Jewish name. And I went on talking about other things. Now, as you may have discovered, whether you've been lucky enough to be a teacher or not, in every class, there's always at least one. So this one brave girl, young woman, raises her hand as I'm speaking. And I said, yes. And she says, so when did you convert? And she wasn't joking. I mean, think for a moment about the thought patterns underneath that question. She could not imagine why a Jewish person would need a name that's not in Hebrew. It turns out that not only had none of them met a Reform rabbi, a Reform Jew, but 25 of the 27 of them had never before met a Jew from the diaspora. So yes, I couldn't have gone and visited with them in grade 7 in English because they wouldn't understand what I had to say. But in a much more profound way, we really weren't speaking the same language. And I had that experience in a number of different ways. I admit that a big piece of it is about Hebrew. Because there is this thing called Yisraeliut, which means Israeliness. And a big part of Israeli Jewish identity is the fact that they live their lives in Hebrew, and statistics show more and more in Hebrew. As of last year, for the first time, more than 75% of Israelis were born in Israel. And in fact, not only were 3 out of every 4 Israelis born in Israel, but more than 50% of Israelis are second generation Israelis. So yes, they may know English, but their English, in fact, is not as good as it once was. In fact, when I had the phenomenal experience of getting an Israeli parking ticket, I blame Theodor Herzl, but that's an entire other explanation. I'll tell that story another time. But I got a parking ticket, and you'll be surprised, I'm Jewish, so I didn't think I deserved the parking ticket. So I called the people who run the parking app, the parking system, and I called them, and the cell phone connection, Startup Nation or no, was terrible. So it sounded like I was talking to the teacher from the Peanuts cartoons. Right? I couldn't understand a word the person said. So I said to the woman I was speaking with, I'm sorry, we have a bad connection. This in Hebrew, of course. I said, I'm having trouble understanding you, but I don't want to wait in line for another hour to talk to someone. Could you have someone call me back? And she said, well, I'm sorry that you don't understand. We don't have anybody on this shift who speaks English. I'll have somebody who speaks English call you back, and hung up on me. Wonderful Israeli hospitality. It's old-fashioned, but parts of it are still there. Again, it's not just about language. The fact that a kind of experience that, in fact, often tourists in Israel have at least as much as Israelis getting tickets, there's no one there who speaks English. Because Israelis have become significantly more Israeli than they used to be. That may sound like an unimportant statement or an obvious statement, but I'm afraid it's neither. That underneath, over time, in a very positive but challenging way, there is a unique Israeli Jewish culture that is in many ways profoundly different from the Jewish culture that we experience here. Let me give you a few examples, one more prayerful, one more political. Now, I attended religious services at quite a number of Reform synagogues. And in almost every one of those services, you may be embarrassed to hear or happy to hear that there was at least one moment in the service when I was completely lost. Now, it's okay. I, in fact, do know the prayers. I've been practicing. But it wasn't about that. In fact, many of the Israeli Reform Jews, most of whom are born in Israel, don't know the prayers because they grew up what's called Chiloni, which is translated somewhat accurately as secular. And they can read the prayers, but they're not familiar with them. But in the new Israeli Reform prayer book that just came out, and in all of the Reform services I attended in Israel, they also sung spiritual Israeli songs that started as contemporary or popular music. And in this service, where I had only moments before been the person who knew what he was doing, the leader of the service would sing the first word of these songs, and everybody sang without even looking at their paper. And I had no idea. Because there is a cultural background. There is an understanding of where they are, of who they are, as Jewish people and Israelis, that is entirely different from the experiences that we have. I mean, what could be more clear than the fact that we're gathering here tonight, and of course it being Kol Nidre, this is the 45th anniversary of the Yom Kippur War. So this moment for Israelis, while in the last year the Israeli Air Force has flown over 200 sorties defending itself from the installment of advanced weaponry by Iran in Syria, this moment is about religious things, but it's also about the need to aggressively defend themselves against those in the neighborhood who truly still do not only seek bad, but seek in many ways the destruction of the land of Israel. Now, this may seem like a problem that we weren't aware of, or maybe that's not so important. So let me try to additionally clarify it by sharing with you an example that came from when I learned about something that we do know is a problem. I attended, while I was there, actually only one lecture in English. It was in Jerusalem, and it was the launch of a wonderful new reference book called Zionist Ideas by Dr. Gil Troy, who taught for many, many years at McGill University. And there were a number of guests who spoke at that book launch. And one of them was a member of Knesset, past member of Knesset, named Einat Vilf. I disagree with her on lots of things, but that's not surprising. Politics is politics. But on the following, I was really touched by what she said. Each of the speakers defined what they think Zionism is. And she said, defining herself as an Israeli feminist, that Zionism is about equality. Zionism is about equality. And for her, that answered the following question. Why is it that it seems to those of us who support Israel, that Israel can never get a fair shake in the world media? Why is it that we can't ever seem to find that one argument or that different way, or we don't say little enough, or we don't say more than enough in order to make our point successfully and convince people that Israel's point of view at least deserves consideration? Why is it that we have that problem ongoing? And she said, the problem is a problem of equality. That Israel, for her, as a partial fulfillment of the Zionist dream, is a representation that the Jewish people have achieved equality with other peoples in the world. Every other people in the world that was denied its own homeland and its own place disappeared from the stage of history, except the Jewish people. And we are still here. And since Israel has come into being, we are again, in addition to other things, a nation among nations. But think about what Jewish people were for thousands of years before that. We were the refugee. We were the dependent. We were the ones who divided into Ashkenazi and Sephardi Jews by culture, by whether we were dependent on an overriding Christian culture or an overriding Muslim culture that dominated our daily life. The Jew is the weak and the dependent for centuries. But now we are, through Israel, violating that idea. And culture takes a long time to change. So people, not even realizing that this is a standard way of thinking, regard Israeli equality as being domineering. We see this in lots of other areas as well, that when people have had privilege, they regard being treated equally as in fact being disadvantaged. And because this is taking place, it's this, she suggested, is why Israel can't get an equal shake in the world media. It's an interesting idea, but it made me think even more deeply about the idea of equality. And as an example of how it is that our Jewish culture and Israeli Jewish culture are different, think for a moment about the meaning to Jewish people of the word equality. What does Jews being equal mean in our lives? Well, historically, Jewish equality in Western society is something we sought and were granted. It's something that we maintain through political engagement and having allies. It is something that comes through interdependence or even dependency, where we live in countries that grant us equality by their founding documents, which we've learned in ongoing history, don't always grant any minority group, us included, the kind of equality they claim to. But our equality is something we seek, but something we need allies and partners in order to attain. And how do Israelis look at equality? What does it mean for Israel to be an equal among nations? Well, Israel is not an equal because she has allies, though she does. Israelis find equality through strength. Equality is about being assertive. It's about the need, not all the time, but when necessary, to stand on her own and do what she must to defend herself. And add to those things that we, with our allies, are a minority everywhere we live. And Israeli culture is a culture of strength and a culture, the only one in the world, where Jews are a majority. And where it is we who would be asked to grant equality to others rather than to seek it for ourselves. These are just a few examples of ways that, in fact, more and more every year, our culture, the culture of the half of the Jews in the world, roughly, that live in the diaspora, and the half of the Jews that live in Israel, the way in which our paths are potentially diverging. And I believe it's this that makes it so challenging for us to deal with political issues. The future of the relationship between Israel and the diaspora is not going to be about what takes place at the Western Wall or about religious pluralism. But they are symptoms, important symptoms, of our inability to talk with one another and to speak the same language. No, I'm not suggesting that we not pay attention to these political matters. They are important. And I look forward in the next month or two, to share with you other insights about that, because I have been invited, thanks to a nomination from our local consul general, in about 3 weeks, to be one of 20 diaspora rabbis of all the major movements who've been invited to Jerusalem to meet with the members of the highest levels of the Israeli government to see about working out these differences between diaspora and Israeli Jews. I look forward to sharing with you reflections after that trip, and I hope it results in much advancement, but I am concerned about our ability during those 5 or 6 days to talk to one another, to really understand one another, to walk side by side, not in parallel, but in understanding with one another. This is a difficult thing to do. It means that we, as Temple Sinai is doing, need to invest significantly in Israeli experiences, in teaching our young people and our adults Israeli culture and Israeli Hebrew. And these are all things that in the last year and even more, you'll see our congregation is doubling down on. But it's not only about the Israeli story. It's about our story too. Because those two stories are equally important for the future of our people. I'll be talking more tomorrow about our story and how it is, I think, we need to conceive of it and share it. But this Kol Nidre, I think we have to challenge ourselves. Challenge ourselves to be aware of the political and the challenging and the newsworthy dimensions of things that happen in Israel and that seem so different from here. We have to engage in them and be serious about them, but we must at the same time invest on a deeper level. We must invest in understanding that the Jewish state and Jewish life in the diaspora will only thrive when we're truly able to understand and communicate with one another. When we have a window each onto the other's culture, each onto the other's daily lives, each onto the other's understanding of the world in which we live. I believe this is possible, but only if we begin in the next number of years to turn our attention to that as individuals, as communities, as larger Jewish communities. Toronto, thankfully, is such a community that more than many others has invested in this effort. And upon returning, I met with leaders at Federation and other leaders in the community as well to seek to advance new directions in which we can interact and understand one another. I look forward to developing and telling you more about those in the weeks and months to come. But eventually that success comes down not merely to programs or ideas, but to attitudes. And so on this Kol Nidre night, a night that we say unites the Jewish people, may we reinvest strongly in a Jewish people who are unified and yet at the same time varied. A Jewish people who have many Jewish cultures, but still seek to interact with and care for and take care of one another. It's only this link that will secure our future for ourselves, our children, and the generations to come. Kei Nihi Ratzon.